from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been 16 years since affirmative action was banned in California. It was the first state to say no. That ban in 1996 changed the complexion of California's universities deeply and immediately. Black and Latino admission rates plummeted. Asian American admission rates soared. Asian Americans now dominate California college admissions, and Asian Americans have fiercely opposed any return to affirmative action. This week, the Supreme Court ruled any state can ban affirmative action. This hour, On Point, college admissions and the California story. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's the bottom line of the California story here? As a nation, where are we headed on admissions, advancement, achievement, equity? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a clip of Asian American University of California Berkeley student Brendan Fung talking with the Daily Californian, the Berkeley newspaper, in February of this year about his thoughts on affirmative action.
My opinion is that it creates an unfair chance for other students, that certain qualified students don't get a chance to attend university because the university has to meet a certain quota because of affirmative action, and they let in students that don't do as well, but it's just based on race.
Just based on race. No thanks. Joining me today from Hayward, California's Katie Murphy, reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. Katie, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Just take us back through the drama here. If you go back to 1996, Justice Sotomayor talked about the changes that took place yesterday in her blistering dissent on the court's decision. What happened in California after the ban on consideration of race?
After the ban went through, immediately you saw it, when it took effect, the admission rates for African American and Latino and Native American students fell, particularly at the most competitive universities at UC Berkeley. Later, the system created a new process to look more, they called it holistic review, to take socioeconomic background into account to try to make up for the fact that they could not consider race or ethnicity anymore as a factor. And that has somewhat mitigated the initial consequences of the ban, but there's still today, the University of California is almost 40% of the undergraduate students are Asian, and compared to 14% of the population. And at UC Berkeley, it's about 44% are Asian American.
You wrote about this last year on the 15th anniversary of the ban, and you quote Janelle Scott there, who had gone to UC Berkeley in the early 1990s, being back on the campus and saying it feels like a different campus from then.
Yes, she said there, especially the African-American student population has really fallen off there. But today, a lot of the focus is on the Latino population in California, because right now, Latino high school graduates, they make up about almost half of all of the high school graduates in California, and they're very underrepresented throughout the UC system, even though they've been gaining some ground.
Latino and Native American students make up about 54% of California's high school graduates, you report, but just 27% of all freshmen, University of California-wide, and just 16% of UC Berkeley's freshman class that year. Of course, UC Berkeley and UCLA being the most selective of the California schools.
That's right. And the system has become increasingly competitive over the years. And I think that's partly what has fueled this the backlash against reversing the affirmative action ban. Since the ban has passed, it's been getting really, really difficult to get into UCLA and UC Berkeley and really any UC besides UC Merced.
At this point, there has recently been an effort to bring some affirmative action back to try and rebalance those admissions numbers. What happened when that was put back on the table in the last few months, Katie?
I think that the Democratic lawmakers were really taken off guard by this. There was a bill to bring this back to the voters to reverse the ban. It made it through the state Senate on a party line vote, and then once word started getting out, particularly in the Chinese American community, which has the highest acceptance rate now to the public university system, there was a tremendous backlash. They were targeting their representatives and Asian American lawmakers in California, and three of the senators actually did an about face and said, you know, they had voted for it in the Senate, and they said, we've changed our minds. And so the bill lost, it no longer had the votes that it needed to make it through the assembly. And so it's been tabled, and the author of the bill, Ed Hernandez, has creating a task force to take it through the state and kind of build momentum for it. Again, he says he's blaming misinformation as one of he's saying that there was misinformation in Chinese language media that was saying that there were going to be quotas, racial quotas in place, which would be unconstitutional. And he's hoping that with better information, he will be able to change people's minds and bring the bill back. But that's still a question.
Katie, the politics of this are volatile and may be changing. From reading your reporting and others, it appears that California legislators, Democratic Party legislators, worried that they might lose this quite significant Asian American community, Chinese American and more, if they pushed again for affirmative action, they might lose them to the Republican Party.
Right. And I mean, there were some rallies held in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley, in Cupertino, for instance, in which Republican lawmakers went and they've definitely used this issue to connect to opponents of affirmative action. And so it's definitely, I mean, the last thing that the Democratic lawmakers want to do is to create a rift in their base. And so they're definitely, but on the other hand, they are under pressure to bring this back. And so they're in a difficult situation right now.
Between the Supreme Court ruling this week and the Asian American backlash to any idea of bringing back affirmative action in California, are Californians now accepting that it's just not going to come back? And what does that mean about the future of the state's college, university population, Katie?
I think it depends on who you ask. Some of the proponents of affirmative action, when I talked to them, they said it's not dead. This is only going to motivate us to bring this back in 2016. As a ballot initiative, and where, you know, students really want this want this to change. But a lot of the, political analysts I talked to said they do not expect this to change at all. They don't think that this will be debated in the future.
Yes, Katie, sorry.
Oh, they say that, I think that, you know, that will, some people say this will inevitably change. It might not change next year or the year after that, but because of the changing demographics of the state, that at some point it will have to change.
We'll look at that and more. Katie Murphy with the San Jose Mercury News. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Gary Orfield joins us right now from Los Angeles, professor of education, law, political science, urban planning at UCLA. He's co-director of the Civil Rights Project at UCLA, co-author of Educational Delusions and the Resegregation of Suburban Schools. Gary Orfield, thank you very much for joining us.
It's great to be with you.
What's the lesson in the California story of these 16 years now of a ban on affirmative action?
The lesson has been that affirmative action is a necessary tool. All of the leaders of the California campuses believe that it's essential if we're going to really represent the state and prepare the state for its future, which is going to be a future in which already only about a quarter of the students in the public schools are white and a majority of the students are Latino. There's a substantial majority of disadvantaged students in the state and extreme segregation in very unequal high schools. So the students don't get a fair chance to prepare. You add that to a very competitive, hierarchical higher education system in which the University of California provides spaces for only the top eighth of the students in the state. And you get a situation where the institutions which want to really educate leaders from all groups in the state are restricted from using tools that almost all of their competitors among highly excellent colleges in the United States can use.
You call it a necessary tool, Gary, but Asian Americans just in the last few weeks here pretty resoundingly said no, and the politicians in California seem to be listening carefully.
Well, what's happened in the Asian American community is very complicated. It's a big community with many sectors, and we have issued a statement together with a number of Asian American groups who actually support affirmative action. It's just not true that Asian Americans are a monolithic group on this, and there are disadvantaged Asian American students who also need some affirmative action from groups that aren't successful. The Asian community is very bipolar.
We'll come back and look at that. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about California, college admissions, and affirmative action. The first state to reject affirmative action 16 years ago, California. We're looking at what has emerged there since. It is maybe surprising in some ways, and other ways, maybe not. Democratic State Senator in California, Ed Hernandez of West Covina, has pushed for a return to affirmative action. That got shot down in recent weeks. Here he was in an interview with KQED last month talking about why he's fighting for a repeal of the ban on affirmative action.
And if you look at the master plan of the state of California, it clearly says that our institution should reflect the diversity of the state. It's not doing that. And if we're going to get prepared for the 20th century or the next century of how we're going to educate our students, we have to make sure we have a diverse population, but more importantly, a diverse workforce.
A diverse workforce, a diverse population, but there's all kinds of ambiguous feeling about things here. Erin Moore, a sophomore in molecular cell biology at UC Berkeley, talked to her college newspaper about affirmative action on college campuses here.
Affirmative action is a hard subject because there's, like, it's to help even out the, you know, like genders and races and just even out the amount of people of each group in a certain area. But at the same time, I mean, like, especially getting into college, it should be for the people that deserve that, you know, that have worked the hardest.
In the Supreme Court dissent written by Justice Sotomayor this week, she was very tough on colleagues and their view of race in the 6-2 decision that supported the state's rights to ban affirmative action. Sotomayor saying race matters and pointing in particular at the California story. What happened after the ban there? Gary Orfield joins us this hour from UCLA. He's co-director of the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. With us as well right now from California, from San Jose, is Henry Liem. He is a professor of philosophy at San Jose City College. He wrote a book in Vietnamese about affirmative action in response to California's 1996 ban. Henry Liem, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
Give us a sense of the politics of California, if you would, Professor Liem. Asian Americans are 14% of the state's population. They are, as Gary Orfield points out, by no means monolithic. Chinese American applicants were admitted to the UC system 78%, pinned the needle in terms of the most, but not all Asian American groups get in that high. How did it happen that an ethnic group that's 14% of the state's population appears to have kind of shut down, at least for now, this conversation on reversing the ban on affirmative action?
Well, I myself received emails from a Chinese group telling us Vietnamese parents that if as AE5 is passed, and they will eliminate a certain percentage of Asian Americans to be admitted to UC system. And that scale up, and Vietnamese parents in my community and generally Asians in general get up in arms and very angry. And so the problem, I think, is lack of communication, and there is a division between the Hispanic community versus Asian community, and I think that there must be a dialogue between the two groups and to communicate to each other about what's really what the legislature wants and what the reality is, and try to find a compromise or a way to get out of this situation.
I want to explore that relationship. Gary Orfield, how do you explain the apparent political power of this 14% of California's population to really shoot this down in the last few weeks?
Well, it hasn't really been shot down. They've withdrawn it, and they're going to hold meetings around the state and so forth. I'm almost certain this is going to come back, and I hopefully after there's a lot of good discussion. What happened with the Asian community was that there were demagogic and false statements sent to hundreds of thousands of Asians all over the country saying this would be a quota system, Asian representation would go down by two-thirds, all kinds of things that aren't true, that weren't true when affirmative action was in place in California. It suggested a number of things that are clearly unconstitutional under the United States Supreme Court's rules would happen in California. It was a mobilization through fear and through misinformation. And one of the things that has to happen is California has to have a rich discussion over this and a rich discussion of what merit means. Because it happens to be that we don't have an equal path to the university. Of the in the top 10% of schools in California, almost half of the Asians are in those schools, one quarter of the whites, but only 4% of blacks and 3% of Latinos. Because of the extreme segregation, students of different ethnicities in California get very different preparation. That's not a matter of merit. That's a matter of segregation. And that segregation is deeply harmful. It's segregation by race and by poverty in very unequal schools. One of the things that's important for people to realize is not only has the attack on civil rights blocked access to college, it's also reinforced segregation. There have been two propositions adopted in California against school desegregation. There are other propositions against bilingual education and rights for immigrants and so forth. So there's a whole series of things that happened in California, particularly during the 1990s when the Republican Party used this issue as its basic wedge issue to try to keep in power as the state's population changed. It played on fear. We have to move beyond fear in California to think about what is fair and what are the protections for all the communities. Certainly the Asian communities are going to be very strongly represented in the University of California no matter what is done about affirmative action. They were before and they're going to be more so in the future because they're a very rapidly growing population here.
Henry Liem, Professor Liem, I wonder if you see some irony. Of course, in history, Asian Americans faced plenty of discrimination in this country. In California in particular, at one time, the university system there would have been heavily white. Do you see some irony in Asian Americans now resisting affirmative action, Professor Liem?
Yes. In fact, within the community, within the family, there's a division, and I think we should avoid the language of segregation and those kind of things that represent another extreme. I myself personally might have benefited from the idea of affirmative action, but even though I was not personally admitted under any of those programs, but my children are going to UC right now. Now, the Asians also put forward an argument if there is a segregation, quote-unquote, then look at that athletic program, sports program at UC system. The overrepresentation of certain ethnic groups, while Asians almost have no representation in those programs.
Sports,
would that be considered segregation? The answer is no. So there's a very emotional debate among Asian community, and like the professor at UCLA just say, it's not a monolithic group. For example, the Cambodian or Hmong Filipino population, student populations are not doing that well, even though they are Asian. So it's an irony, and even within the community, it's still an evolving issue. In the old day, affirmative action means civil rights, white versus black and Native American. Now it's within the Asian community, there's a division right there, not just only Asian versus Latino or black.
Carlos Munoz joins us in just a moment. A couple of callers, if I may, first. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Tucker is calling. Hi, Tucker, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. In Oklahoma City, we have a fairly significant population of Vietnamese as well, and which, sort of like in UC Berkeley, there is a disproportionate amount of them in the universities. I wrote a paper on this a few years back, and basically the question is this. The implication of this affirmative action discussion that we're having is really being danced around, and that is this. Are we willing to say to, for instance, the Vietnamese community, which historically has been very, very educational focused? It's something that's observed within the culture.
Yeah.
Are we willing to say, thanks, but no thanks. You tried hard, but we have enough of you now.
And, of course, this has happened in the past. There were times when Jewish Americans felt that the brakes were being hit in terms of the percentage of their admissions to universities. Gary Orfield, I wonder about this. As we go forward in this country and lines become less clear, history recedes, you don't have the same sort of culpability or sense of guilt or obligation from the historically dominant white community. Does the call to just go with merit become stronger? Do Chinese Americans, Korean Americans, Vietnamese Americans say, look, we have a scholarship-oriented culture, we work hard, we've worked our way up, and we're in, and we don't want to have any kind of quotas here?
There can't be quotas. The quotas have been illegal since 1978. Nobody is talking about quotas, and that is exactly what roused so much fear in the Asian community in California, the claim that there were going to be quotas on Asian students. There's nothing in affirmative action that's legal that uses quotas. And the idea that there is a simple merit that you can get from test scores, for example, is not accurate either, because basically your test scores, your SAT or ACT scores, are very directly related to your parent education and to the quality of the schools that you've attended. And both of those things are very related to race. So if you're a very smart kid and you don't grow up in a family in a neighborhood that has a lot of educational resources, and you go to a dropout factory high school, and you somehow get through that and you have a good academic record, good grades in the school, and good, you do everything you can in the unequal context in which you're placed, that is merit. It's merit, and people need to take that seriously. It's not merit. It doesn't show that you are the most meritorious if you happen to have the parents with the most resources and go to the very best schools and get all kinds of special training programs and spend thousands of dollars on counseling about how to take the test. That's not merit.
Henry Liam, what do you say, sir?
I agree. I think that we have to fix not just with the admission policy at UC, but from high school. I think SAT is very not accurate measurement of the ability of students to do well in college. It's very quantitative oriented. It takes a lot of time for pre-test training, and Asian Americans have to spend numerous hours, and you have to have a resource to do basic training for that test, and high school too, students too. So I think we have to fix from the time of early high school and prepare all ethnic group for and change the way that the SAT is designed and taken.
But Professor Lim, if I may, how are you going to do that? If you've got 14% Asian Americans, Chinese Americans at the forefront, an even smaller percentage, opposing this recent push for affirmative action, they were able to derail that project. It'll take another form perhaps, but it suffered a big setback. Politically, how do you get to the kind of changes you're talking about?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it's an evolving issue. It's an Asian community is not a monolithic group. And Chinese Americans reacted very emotionally and negatively because I think the issue have not been put forward in the daylight.
Yeah.
So with a conversation, with a dialogue, I think the Chinese American will come to an understanding that there must be some solution for this issue. And I think that we have to work it out, because we cannot stand on different sides and yell at each other like a situation right now.
Yeah,
one of the things that's really interesting about what's happening in the legislature now is that not one single white Democrat has voted against this proposition to end the restriction on affirmative action. So the Asian community is putting itself in a very difficult position if it becomes the force that blocks access by a majority of the students in California to opportunities at the university. Seems to me we should be getting together around expanding the university so there's more spaces, so the competition isn't so hysterical, so that you can do both. Have this wonderfully talented Asian community and more representation of the really disadvantaged and isolated, unfairly educated majority of students in California.
Of course, that would be great, but resources have been shy lately. Gary Orfield, Henry Liam, please stand by. Carlos Munoz Jr. joins us right now from Albany, California. Professor Emeritus in the Department of Ethnic Studies at University of California, Berkeley, founding chair of the first Chicano Studies Department in the nation in 1968 at California State University at Los Angeles. Carlos Munoz Jr., thank you very much for joining us, sir.
You're welcome.
Are you surprised at how this debate has evolved in California over these last 16 years?
No, I'm not. Not at all surprised. I think this has been the trend for a long time by the political and economic forces that have committed themselves to undermining the gains of the civil rights movement of the 1960s, and affirmative action was one of those. Now, I think everything has been said. It has been well put, but let me just go back a little bit here and find out what has happened since 1996 in terms of Latino, situation.
Yeah.
Latinos today in the state of California lag behind all ethnic groups in college completion. Only 10.7% get a BA degree compared to white 39.3%, compared to Asian, of course, 47.9%, the highest, and African-American at 23.0%.
Mm-hmm.
So only 11% of Latino adults in our state of California presently have a bachelor's degree, compared to 39% of whites. Now, in contrast that with the population figures, 38% of the California population is Latino, 39.2% white, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So whites have not suffered, from affirmative action or the lack of it. They are doing very well in terms of educational attainment. And I think we have to go beyond the numbers, really, to understand the nature of this issue. It's got to do with race. It's got to do with institutional racism. I think that, as Gary has put it very well, the reality is that Latino kids today are not receiving an adequate education that prepares them for entry into universities.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about California, college admissions, and affirmative action. California, of course, the first state in the country to reject affirmative action 16 years ago, and we're looking at what has emerged there since. Admissions rates for African Americans, Latinos fell dramatically. They have, in many ways, stayed down. Admissions rates for Asian Americans have soared. 14% of the population in California, 40% plus of the admissions there. And at the most elite schools, UC Berkeley, UCLA, some of those groups very much higher than that. There's been a new push to bring back affirmative action. Asian Americans vociferous in shouting that down. It may find a way forward, but this is a new and complicated conversation in a changing field of ethnicity, politics, expectations, values in California. With the Supreme Court's ruling this week saying states are free to ban affirmative action, the whole country might well pay attention to what's going on, what's gone on in California. We're joined with some really good observers out of California. Carlos Munoz Jr. joins us, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Ethnic Studies, UC Berkeley. Henry Liam joins us from San Jose, Professor of Philosophy at San Jose City College. And Gary Orfield is with us today from Los Angeles, Professor of Education, Law, Political Science, Urban Planning at UCLA and co-director of the Civil Rights Project there. I want to get our listeners in. Debbie in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you for calling. Debbie, you're on the air.
And thank you for taking my call, too. I'm almost moved by the description that was given of students who start in impoverished communities who sort of work their way through that. That's been possible, by the way, under affirmative action. Mm-hmm. The reality is that the student body and the work body, the workforce, ought to reflect the diversity of the community. And when it does not, something is wrong. There's some sort of preference going on there. The affirmative action was a tool to allow us to bring diversity into the schools and into the workplaces. That's what affirmative action did for us. And the California system shows us what happens even in 2014. If we move that away, if we take that away, we will then go back to what it was before we had affirmative action, which is that the schools and employment no longer reflect the community.
Debbie, let me ask you something. I'm sure you know the history here. I can hear that. You know, when affirmative action came out of the civil rights era and beyond, there was an old narrative in this country, and it was kind of white and black. When you look at California now, and it's much more complicated, fractured, interesting in many ways, culturally, ethnically, racially, do you think affirmative action can survive when you've got all kinds of different groups who don't share that, I hate to say this, but kind of simpler black-white history? Can we get back to affirmative action in a setting like that, Debbie?
Yes, we can, because affirmative action would say that the student body should reflect all the members of the community. To be sure, I am not in favor of racial preference to anyone. I am not in favor of gender preference to anyone. Everyone must have an equal opportunity. The reality, however, is that that equal opportunity does not exist. We know it doesn't exist because the public school system, out of which most African Americans come through, is an abysmal failure. And we don't even, that's a topic for another discussion, I know. But I want you to know that because of affirmative action, I, who came up in Chicago,
yes,
in some of the lowest schools in Chicago, was able to go to college as the first person in my entire family history to ever go to college, not only to college, but to medical school, and therefore get out of poverty. And that in education, a strong education has been our only way to get out of poverty.
Debbie, you talk about a moving story. Your story is moving right there. And I really appreciate your perspective here. I want to hold it for one moment, get one more caller and take it to our panel. Debbie, thank you so much. In Madison, Mike in Providence, Rhode Island. Mike, you're on.
Tom, how you doing?
Okay, what do you see?
I'm confused by what you're saying, because you said disadvantaged groups, you said poor economics, but that's nothing to do with affirmative action. It only has to do with race having a factor in the admissions. And on top of that, I don't blame Asian American families for opposing this. If you're told statistically with affirmative action, your kid has to score significantly higher than another kid just because the color of his skin, to get into a top school, which will affect the rest of her life,
yep,
of course you're going to oppose it. I mean, the fundamental discussion about disadvantage has nothing to do with this conversation. This is a conversation.
How can you say that when you look racially, and this is not across the board, but if you know historically, certain groups have been disadvantaged. I mean, that's just a fact, and sometimes it's lined up with race. We know that as well. I mean, if we don't address that, how do we not have a racially sort of segregated, tiered society someday? Now.
We have a tiered society. It's called by class and income, and that's a perfectly wonderful way of doing it. I mean, Texas has a top 10% plan, which is working very well, to to pretend that admitting someone based on race will cure all these ills, where it doesn't at all. It's just people in the minorities, select minorities, might I add, in the higher economic situations doing better. If we want to uplift the young children in Detroit, Central Chicago, Newark, New Jersey, affirmative action is not helping them because their test scores, because of their economic disadvantages, are lower than the suburban minorities.
Mike, we've got it. Let me take it to Carlos Munoz. Professor Munoz, let's ignore race, and let's give preference, if we need to, just across the board by disadvantage, not by ethnicity, color, race.
Well, I think on that score, we can still look at the Latino reality as also being class. It's race and class combined. It's just not one and the other. And I think that what the caller right now said reflects the ignorance on the part of most Americans about the reality and the connection between race and class. And affirmative action, by the way, was never, never solely race. It was a combination of different factors, you know, including class. And so the disadvantage, in quote, label may be, you know, an inappropriate one in some way, but the reality is that there is not only race discrimination, but there's also class discrimination and gender discrimination. And by the way, as a footnote, those who profited most from affirmative action were white women. Okay, Latinos did not profit from it because at all times it has always been a case of admissions that has to do with those who are admissible. Affirmative action was never addressing those kids that were not prepared adequately in the high schools.
But let me ask you something, if I may. Carlos,
criteria.
Yeah, Carlos Munoz, I'm looking here to our caller Mike's point. And this fascinates me. This is from Katie Murphy. She was with us earlier. Her reporting says, overall, UC campuses today are admitting more students from poor families than before the ban. More than one-third of the 35,000 UC freshmen in 2010 came from families making less than $40,000. That's up from 28% in 1995. So more poor kids are getting in, and you're still not getting the racial, ethnic diversity you'd like to see, Professor.
Because that does not include Latinos, okay?
Well, of course it does. I mean, they're part of the...
Right. I mean, yeah, there's been more, quote, economically disadvantaged kids getting in, but there has not been more Latino kids in that category getting in. And precisely because in the Latino reality at the public school level, 41.5% never get to graduate from high school. There is a reality today in American society, the most segregated, de facto segregated children are Latinos. Okay? So this is the reality here. This is why they don't get to first base in terms of admissions in that category of disadvantage.
Yep, yep.
You know, one of the problems is most of the kids in California are now disadvantaged. So all racial groups have a lot. Oh. And new immigrants tend to be disadvantaged economically when they first come, even though they have really good education and they live in integrated areas and go to good schools. So if you just look at money, it's not going to get you the same population, especially if it's money plus really good academic preparation, because nobody gets into the University of California that doesn't have good educational preparation.
More poor in general, that may be part of the reason for more poor in college, but still, Shaolin is calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. Shaolin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me express my voice here.
Of course.
I have a few points I want to make. I myself is a Chinese immigrant.
Okay.
My kids, 9 and 7, they go to Kumon Learning Center.
For extra math education or more.
Reading. I mean, initially they do reading because as a non-native speaker, I worry that their English wouldn't be as good as...
Yeah, sure.
Peers. Mm-hmm. So I won't give them some extra help.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, they do that. They do both reading and math. Mm-hmm. And then I see what are the kids go to Kumon learning centers. Mm-hmm. Most of them are Asians. So the point I want to make here is that my kids and me as parents, we put a lot of time, hours, hard work to prepare them for their future. And the affirmative action, well, the ban, I mean, the potential of excluding certain talented Asian kids from the top universities really takes away the value of our hard working, which makes me very, very nervous.
So you're afraid that if affirmative action returns, it would disadvantage your kids, let's say, who have done all the after hours extra work and put in that double effort.
I was telling myself, well, if they are white, that will, their hard work will be valued. And now, if only because their skin, color of their skin, the hard work won't be appreciated in the future. Well, that's one point I want to make.
Yeah.
The other point is that when people talk about the segregations in a college system, I think they're only talking about the top 10 or the top universities in the U.S. Well, there you do see, I think I agree that you have a higher percentage of Asian population in those top universities. But in UCs, you have UC Berkeley, you have UCLA, you have UC...
Yeah, Charlene, I'm going to stop you there. I mean, it's higher, the Asian representation is higher in the very top universities, but across the system, it's definitely very strong, disproportionate to the overall numbers. If I may, let me take that to Henry Liam. Henry, you hear Charlene's concern here. You described yourself the cultural tradition of a heavy emphasis in many Asian American societies on scholarship. I mean, is it possible to have affirmative action and respect that history? I mean, maybe we're just headed into a time here where Asian Americans are going to say, come on, if you want to get in, study as hard as we do, spend all the time that we do, and we don't want to hear about affirmative action at the end of the day.
Well, I think the discourse have to be changed in terms of tone and even the language itself. If you use the word affirmative action or quota, that will scare up a lot of people, especially in Asian and the white community. And if you use segregation, that would arouse a lot of emotional reaction too.
Yes, yes.
So I think there's a whole package. I think the preparation from high school level, admission process, SAT, and right now I want to repeat myself that there must be a dialogue between the Hispanics and Asian community, especially in California, to address the concern with the parent, like CJ say from Louisiana,
yes.
and within my community too. So there is a lot of misunderstanding right now, and so try to tone down the rhetorics, and I think that we have to work this out. There will be a way. I think right now it's a very emotional stage, very preliminary stage, and it will be a long process.
Gary Orfield, I wonder if the old narrative and tone of the civil rights narrative has just gone away in California. I mean, how do you establish this dialogue that Henry's talking about when, you know, those Asian American families are feeling this very vividly right now, and maybe they don't feel part of the old narrative that established affirmative action in the first place.
You know, a colleague and I taught a big class here at UCLA for undergraduates on which this was one of the issues, and it was a very emotional discussion. Many Asian students, Black students, Latino students, white students, got together from more than 20 disciplines to talk about these issues. It's not an easy conversation, but it is a really important one. And the truth is there are many Asian students who are very concerned about being in a society that is fair and that's representative and not being in a state that doesn't educate its majority and doesn't produce leaders from all groups. But it's a long, hard, and hard discussion.
Yeah,
and it's part of it is to increase the pie. Right now, UCLA, all the campuses in California are taking more and more out-of-state and foreign students because the state is not funding the students from California. This is an issue on which Asians and Latinos and Blacks and whites could all agree on. Let's take a little money out of things like excessive imprisonment and put it into expanding the University of California and having more spaces for students in California.
Carlos
then
Munoz,
we won't be talking about allocating such a shortage. The shortage is because the state has failed to provide as the population has grown.
That would be great. Carlos Munoz, are you hopeful? And what happens if California doesn't succeed in getting more of its, at least plurality population, now Latinos, into the university system?
Well, the result is going to be the emergence of a neo-apartheid society in California, because there's going to be a white minority rule continuing at the expense of the majority people of color population in our state of California. That's just what I see forthcoming if there's no change, if affirmative action is, again, not allowed.
Why do you say white minority when we've got lots of groups now at play here, including Asian Americans?
Well, that's a good question. But in terms of the political economic structures of society, okay, Asian Americans are not in the don't have a visible presence in the corridors of power. Okay.
Well, they did. They did this month, didn't they?
Well, they did this month. But again, as Professor Lin has pointed out, that Asian American community is very diverse. And, you know, there are groups within that population that are not profiting from the reality of achievement that we are talking about in terms of the high rates of the Asian American presence. Asian Americans covers a lot of different groups.
Yes, it does.
And, with the exception of the Chinese and possibly the Japanese, maybe Korean, the other groups, you know, are not well represented at all.
Carlos Munoz, we're out of time right there, but as always, you and California give us a lot to think about nationally, and we're grateful for the insights that emerge right there. Carlos Munoz in Albany, California, Henry Liam in San Jose, California, and Gary Orfield in Los Angeles at UCLA. I want to thank all three of you very much for your insights this hour. Listeners, thanks for your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.